From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, part one of a two-part interview by Press TV's Marzia Hashemi with Iran's foreign minister, Dr. Mohammad Javad Zarif.
Dr. Zarif, the main discussion of the day is dealing with JCPOA, and of course the IAEA chief has come to Iran. Let's start from there. What type of expectations do you have of why he's come, and tell me Iran's stance? Is the stance basically that in 2 days, if the United States does not rejoin, that basically Iran is going to stop the voluntary part of the protocol?
This is what we can do in accordance with paragraph 36 of the JCPOA, which enables Iran to take remedial action against failure by other members of the JCPOA to implement their obligations. Now, the United States withdrew from the JCPOA, violated Security Council resolutions, and basically punished anybody who tried to observe international law. The EU, particularly the three countries, UK, France, and Germany, did not do anything to implement their own obligations. They all say that we signed a number of instructions. But if they read JCPOA, it's not just signing, it's the impact. And they also made two declarations with Iran that they would implement 11 commitments. They didn't implement even a single one of those commitments. So we started these measures in line with JCPOA. We are not violating JCPOA. We are implementing remedial measures foreseen in the JCPOA itself. Now, the parliament is not talking to the world. Parliament is talking to us as the executive branch, and is telling us, unless you can show us and report to us that sanctions have been lifted, meaning that the United States, after the change of administration, is not simply making statements, but actually acting based on those statements, then you cannot continue to implement the voluntary commitment that you had to implement the additional protocol. So this is not a deadline for the world. This is not an ultimatum. This is an internal domestic issue between the parliament and the government. But we have a democracy. We are supposed to implement the laws of the country. And the parliament adopts a legislation, whether we like it or not.
Because I know that part of the Rouhani government did not particularly like when parliament set this date. Tell me about that.
Because we believe that we were exercising our rights within paragraph 36 of the JCPOA, and we did not need a parliamentary decision. We had started taking remedial measures, and one of those remedial measures could have been additional protocol, and we would have been in a position to take it. But the parliament, and we said that this is an executive matter, we will take care of it. But the parliament decided, like in any democracy, that the government has a view, the parliament has a different view. We do not have a parliamentary democracy in which the government represents the parliament. It's a separate branch. We have separation of powers here. And unlike the United States, we do not have a veto. The president cannot veto a parliamentary decision. So parliament adopted the decision. It became law of the land. We are supposed to implement law of the land. This is a lawful country, not a lawless country. So we're implementing the law. Now, Mr. Grossi, the Director General of IAEA, requested to come here so that we could have a smooth transition. We have nothing to hide. Iran does not seek to develop nuclear weapons. the decision is based on sound geopolitical facts and religious and moral grounds. It's not just religious and moral grounds, it's geopolitical facts. And that decision stands without any ifs or buts. That decision that Iran will never develop or use nuclear weapons or other weapons of mass destruction is a final position of the government.
And of course the leader of the revolution has said that it is against Islam, and it's geopolitically not smart. But at the same time that Iran has been saying this over the years, we know time and time again, the United States and their European partners have continually to concentrate on that aspect. So today, with the IAEA chief...
Let me make one point.
Okay, go ahead.
One point, if I may. There is no seriousness about that position. Last night I tweeted something. There is a report in The Guardian that Israel has been expanding Dimona. You know that Dimona is the only nuclear weapon, nuclear bomb factory in the Middle East. No other nuclear weapon factory. And it's an open secret. Did we hear any expression of concern from President Biden or from Chancellor Merkel or from President Macron? Even a little bit of concern? So any talk about concern about Iran's nuclear program is absolute nonsense. Let's be clear on that. It's hypocrisy. Because if they were concerned about non-proliferation, Israel is not a member of NPT. It's proliferator number one in the world. Nobody even catches Israel in terms of proliferation. It's aggressor number one in the world. It's occupier number one in the world. It's the user of force number one in the world. It's violator of human rights number one in the world.
So nobody cares.
Okay, thus,
as you said, showing some hypocrisy on their part. With this being said, then, with the IAEA chief here today, and basically representing these same entities. So what are your expectations?
Theoretically and legally, IAEA represents all of us. Of course, those countries exercise undue influence in international organizations. International organizations are supposed to be, at least theoretically, based on sovereign equality. So we deal with Mr. Grossi, Director General Grossi, as not a representative of major powers, but somebody who represents us as well. Doesn't represent Israel, because Israel is not a member of the IAEA, but it represents us. So it's not a member of the Safeguards Agreement or the NPT. So we will talk to him about respecting the rule and the laws of our country, which means implementing the decision of the parliament, but at the same time, not creating an impasse for him to continue to carry out the obligations to show that Iran's nuclear program remains peaceful, because our program does remain peaceful. We don't intend to change the nature of our program. It's a peaceful program. We had agreed to additional measures of monitoring in order to implement an agreement which had two pillars. Iran showing that it does not intend to develop nuclear weapons, and the West normalizing Iran's economic relations with the world. It doesn't say Security Council Resolution 2231 or JCPOA. Neither one of them say that they should simply pass certain legislation or executive orders. The objective is to normalize Iran's economic relations with the world. Anybody in their right mind, looking at the situation now, could they say that our relations, economic relations with the world has been normalized? So there has been a dismal failure on the part of the Europeans and the Americans to implement their obligation. Now, we have reduced the level of our commitment, but we have always said it's reversible. The minute they come back to to full compliance, we will go back to full compliance.
From the very beginning of this agreement, they really did not carry out the sanctions. All the sanctions were never lifted. Do you have a different expectation this time around? Has the situation changed, or basically, is it the same entity with a different face? Your assessment.
Actually, sanctions were lifted on paper, but the objective was to keep the sanctions that were not lifted more than to implement the sanction, the lifting of the sanctions obligations. This was a problem during Obama administration. This was the problem during the Trump administration. They were out in the open trying to torpedo the agreement. And then finally they left the agreement. So we need to, and we have said it very clearly, that once everybody implements their part of the obligation, then there will be talks, and those talks will not be about changing the agreement or adding to the agreement, because all of the issues have been discussed. The time frames, they call it sunset, but these are time frames, regional issues, missile issues, all of them have been discussed and addressed. So we're not going to discuss those, but we are going to discuss how we can avoid and guarantee that the actions by the United States will not be repeated. That somebody 2 years down the road, 4 years down the road, just because they don't like the previous president, would come and simply like a revolution change the agreement of the country. So they are in a position to assure us. We're not, we've done our work.
It was never fulfilled. So even during the Obama administration, they had not fulfilled their side of the bargain. So now we have, again, the IAEA chief. There's a deadline that Parliament has put. So what exactly does that mean, this deadline comes? Are the cameras then going to be stopped? Because we know that the cameras are showing basically footage, constant footage of the various sites. The cameras are going to be stopped or cut off or what?
We are discussing all these issues today with the IAEA, but we will not, certainly, we will be required by law not to provide the tapes of those cameras.
Why not just cut them off?
To the IAEA.
Why not just cut them off?
Well, that's a decision. That's a technical decision. That's not a political decision. I'm not making that decision. Mm. It's at a technical level. But IAEA will certainly not get footage from those cameras. In the past, they would get them automatically, not online, but automatically. But now it is clear that they won't get a footage. As long as the United States has not come back to full implementation of its agreement, of its obligations. There will be other measures that we will take. Those measures are being discussed right now in the Atomic Energy Organization today. Later this afternoon, I'll see Mr. Grossi in this very room, so I'll be discussing it with him. But the technical part, the decision will be taken by the Atomic Energy Organization with Director General Grossi.
As far as the IAEA itself, because we've seen over the years different situations happen. We saw Dr. Fakhrizadeh, who was assassinated, and there's some suspicions that perhaps the IAEA has passed on information. Will you be discussing this side of things, that to guarantee when Iran is cooperating with the IAEA that the information that is given is confidential and not being passed on? Because you said the IAEA technically represents Iran also, but many would say that's not really what we have seen over the years.
Let me, in the interest of fairness, Dr. Fakhrizadeh was not an IAEA finding. Israelis created this whole nonsense about Dr. Fakhrizadeh long before. the IAEA had any access, and the IAEA did not meet with him. So in the interest of fairness to the IAEA, it has nothing to do with him. But we just saw that the IAEA is not officially releasing, but leaking information that is supposed to be confidential. Anything between us and the IAEA, based on IAEA statute, should remain confidential. Confidentiality is a requirement. Otherwise, no country would allow IAEA to inspect their sites. Some of them may have security ramifications for Iran, whose peaceful nuclear sites have been attacked, most recently in Natanz, and in other places. For a country whose nuclear scientists have been murdered in terrorist operations in the past, and now recently with Mr. Fakhrizadeh, so confidentiality is essential.
So
the IAEA has an obligation for confidentiality. We already protested to the IAEA about the lack of due diligence in making sure that confidentiality is observed. So this I will raise again with Mr. Gross.
We have a new president now in the United States. It appears, though, basically singing the same tune, just in a different way, when dealing with Iran. Of course, Biden has said that there have been some changes, but if we actually look at what he's saying, nothing really has changed. So tell me your expectations right now.
Let me first tell you that I agree with you. Nothing has changed. Biden claims that Trump's policy of maximum pressure was maximum failure. Blinken also just recently said that policy failed. But for all practical purposes, they're pursuing the same policy. They haven't changed that policy. The problem in the United States, and it doesn't matter which administration, the Islamic Republic now has dealt with 7 consecutive U.S. presidents, and I have dealt with almost 5 of them. And the problem is, U.S. is addicted to sanctions. U.S. is addicted to pressure. U.S. is addicted to bullying. And time and again, it may work some other places. It doesn't work in a country with millennia of history. Not just a millennium, millennia of history. That may be difficult for some to comprehend in Washington, but we have had an empire, a global empire, that lasted longer than the United States, than the history of the United States. So for us, these ups and downs in history are brief moments. They should accept that with Iran, bullying doesn't work. Pressure doesn't work. Maximum pressure, according to them, led to maximum failure. What they need to do now is to open their eyes, make a sober assessment of the past, not just Trump, but everybody, and understand that with this country, only respect works. And I can assure you, they've tried all the wrong policies, haven't they? Now, for a bit, they can try the right policy.
How likely is that to happen? Dr. Zaidi, 42 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution.
I won't lose any sleep. Let me tell you, I won't lose any sleep over it.
They will rejoin the JCPOA, but not remove the sanctions. What about the snapback? I mean, couldn't they then implement that?
Well, the United States will not be able to rejoin the JCPOA before they remove the sanctions. This is not a revolving door. Being member of a JCPOA.
Is that written down?
It wasn't written down that they could leave. They broke the law to leave.
So you're demanding that all the sanctions have to be removed before they come back to JCPOA.
That's all the sanctions have to be removed. The United States must gain re-entry to the JCPOA. It's not automatic. It's not a revolving door. And let me tell you something else. There is no snapback in JCPOA. We all saw that. They withdrew the letter. Why? I mean, the word snapback is a U.S. creation. Is a fact sheet creation. It's not a JCPOA word. Why does the United States produce these fact sheets? Because it wants to spin the facts. If they wanted to present the facts, this text is in English. It's not in Farsi. They don't need to translate it to any other language. Why did they produce a fact sheet? Why did they talk about snapback that doesn't exist there? There is a process. In paragraphs 36 and 37 of JCPOA, and in paragraphs 11 to 14 of Resolution 2231, a lengthy, difficult process. You know, we did not negotiate this agreement, 159 pages of agreement, for somebody to wake up in the morning and say, yeah, I don't want it. Let's get out of it. It's not like that. There is no snapback. Snapback is an erroneous concept giving rise to an erroneous perception. Snapback is not in the JCPOA. It's not even the concept of snapback without the wording is not there. It's an American creation and it's an American distortion. Well, it's not exactly the fact.
I mean, if we look at, because I believe Wendy Sherman in her book, I mean, she talked about, she said, the use of wording, jargon, the way they do it. And she said that the Iranians, when they were talking about suspending sanctions, that the Iranian side took that as meaning lifting all sanctions.
In fact, she uses the other way around. She says Iranians believed that lifting of sanctions meant removal, whereas lifting of sanctions meant suspension. The word lifting is used in JCPOA, no suspension, at least not for the United States. Lifting, I mean, Wendy Sherman, I do not want to basically insult anybody.
Yes,
she's done enough of that. All of that. But I don't intend to insult her. Her area of specialty academically is public health, public something. She doesn't have a day of experience at the United Nations. She doesn't know UN language. Go read resolutions of the Security Council. Lifting in the Security Council means removal. She is wrong. She doesn't know English. It's not me who doesn't know English. My English, when it comes to UN language, is far, far better than her language. Her English.
That considers itself above the others, the hegemon of the world. I mean, we understand that that's how the United States look at things. Isn't that part of this diplomatic game as far as playing with the wording?
No.
As far as playing with the wording?
No. Had they been able to play with the wording, they would have used JCPOA rather than leave JCPOA. They would have now come back to JCPOA rather than insist that they need to change JCPOA. That's their hegemonic thinking. Their hegemonic thinking is, what's mine is mine, what's yours is negotiable. That's hegemonic thinking. That won't work. The wording in the JCPOA, had they been able to use it, Bolton would have used it, because Bolton had 2 years of experience in the United Nations, unlike Wendy. 2 years of experience in the United Nations. So he knew what was in it. So I'm very sorry to say to Wendy Sherman that with all your insults, you didn't get the meaning of the word lift, not we.
But isn't part of it right now, when they're talking about, because you said if they knew what was best or how to deal with wording, actually they shouldn't have left the JCPOA. But isn't it at this point in time that they want to go beyond that?
They won't be able to.
That.
They won't be able to. Period.
Renegotiate the JCPOA.
No. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. We spent...
And you want the U.S.
No,
to come
not
back...
First. First and last.
No, not first. First and last. There won't be any renegotiation, period. Not before they enter, not after they enter. This is a solid agreement endorsed by a Security Council resolution.
So they have to,
end of story. End of story.
And all sanctions have to be lifted.
You see, we have in the JCPOA and in Resolution 2231, it talks about implementation of the measures within the time frame agreed upon. This is not our resolution. It's their resolution. They presented it. They voted for it. Iran expressed reservations about it because we never recognized those sanctions. So it puts a time frame. A part of that time frame was the lifting of all the restrictions on the purchase and sale of Iranian military hardware. In October 2020, that ended. Now, the United States had written to the Security Council and took back their nonsense during Pompeo. It's not a major concession to Iran. They just accepted the reality that 13 countries in the Security Council, 110 countries in the General Assembly opposed them. 2 countries in the Security Council and 10 countries in the General Assembly agreed with them. That should be a history lesson for the United States. I think U.S. history book, Sister Marzia, should remember this, that the United States was rejected by 110 members of the General Assembly with only 10 countries supporting, the biggest power on the face of the earth. Biggest power on the face of the earth. That means what? That means end of United States hegemony.
To take a quick break. We're going to continue our face-to-face, our special interview with Iran's foreign minister, Dr. Mohammad Javad Zarif, after a few minutes. Stay with us right here at Press TV. Well, welcome back, viewers, to our special interview with Iran's foreign minister, Dr. Mohammad Javad Zarif, on this face-to-face. And we're having a very interesting conversation together. Thanks so much for giving us this time. Dr. Zarif, we were talking about the JCPOA, of course, the subject of the day for sure. I want to look at how the Europeans, your analysis of how the European signatories to this have actually shown themselves before and currently. I believe that Iran had different expectations of them.
Unfortunately, Europeans have had different expectations of themselves. They thought that they could, in fact, have an impact on their own companies. That is why not only in the JCPOA they made certain commitments, not simply to remove in their books and in their law codes certain sanctions, but to see their effect affecting Iranian economy, which didn't take place, but even after U.S. withdrawal, because some of them claim that we never knew that U.S. would withdraw. The fact of the matter is, after U.S. withdrew, twice they made commitments, 11 commitments at the ministerial level. Those commitments were to normalize Iran's oil sales, repatriation of money, shipping, insurance, investment. They made those commitments themselves after U.S. withdrew. I'm insisting after U.S. withdrew, because those commitments were made in full knowledge of U.S. policy of preventing them. But they made those commitments. Now, either they made those commitments in bad faith, knowing that they couldn't implement them, which is really a discredit for the European Union, or they made those commitments in good faith, hoping that they would be able to implement them. But they know themselves that they haven't been able to implement even a single one of them. By the way, INSTEX, this financial mechanism that they were supposed to create, was not among those 11s.
it's a prerequisite, a small step to even reach the first step.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.